This is How We See It, a look at issues that impact our faith and community. For the next few minutes, we'll explore topics with people who are making a difference in our world.
I'm Ellie Spada on the phone with Peter Mulry. He has been a winning coach with Tampa Catholic and the University of Tampa. He has been doing life skills clinics for 20 years, and January 9th marks an important date for him. Peter, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Hi, how are you? Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what's happening on January 9th?
Ellie, we are going to have it's our 20th anniversary of our Stars of the Future Life Skills Through Sports Clinic. This year we'll do it virtually, January 9th at 9 a.m. We'll do it through Facebook Live on my foundation page, and then we'll also do it via YouTube. But we just figured, you know, last year we had over, between children and parents and volunteers, we had over 600 last January.
Oh, wow.
At the Catholic High School. But with COVID, we just figured, you know, let's kind of take a breather this year. We may have it later in the year, but we don't want to be forgotten. So we're going to do this virtual clinic, which is going to be really neat. Got some great people with us, along with some videotaped instructions. So we're excited about that event.
Okay, now which sport is the clinic going to be teaching the kids?
Sure. We'll have a little softball, and we'll have a little baseball instruction, but also our power panel will also talk about life skills such as teamwork, discipline, hard work, how to build relationships with people, commitment. It's going to be a combination of, you know, life skills through sports theme again, as I always do, and try to give people some instruction, but also some life skills for their toolbox that they can use that as in their everyday lives.
So in the years, how many kids do you think you've impacted with this event?
Well, this is our 20th year, and with kids and parents, we're thinking probably over 10,000 children and parents during this time, Ellie. And by the way, also, we've done over $1 million in scholarship money, a lot through our ACES Nation program, and we will continue that even this year with people listening on that Saturday. And ACES Nation program, what it is that we'll match any points that children earn. So at the end of their high school, going into college years, those points convert into dollars that they can use.
Okay, so how did you start these clinics? Why did you start these clinics?
Oh, it was funny. In my other life up in Pensacola, I ran a very prominent real estate company on the beach in Perdido Key, Florida. And one day, one of the folks from the local park said, "Didn't you used to coach baseball?" And I said, "Yes, I did in my other life." And so, he said, "Would you come down and, you know, would you give our kids a clinic and teach them things?" And I said, "I'll come down and teach your kids some softball and baseball skills if I can teach some life skills and deal with the coaches how to do that."
Interesting.
So that's how it got started, Ellie, about 20 years ago. In fact, an awful lot of the Naval Air Station folks up that way helped me get going 20 years ago. And here we are 20 years later, and we're still going.
Why are the life skills and that component of what you teach so important to you?
Well, if you don't do that, then it becomes all about winning. Instead of the way to win. And, you know, I'm a proponent of co-curricular activity in schools, not extracurricular. I think sports should be taught the same way. Teaching soccer should be the same way as chemistry, history, home economics. It doesn't matter. And if you want, you know, some life skills to come out of the classroom, you got to expect them to come out of the sports field. And that's what I always been a proponent of. You know, you go back and look at, you know, my first book I wrote, Conversations in the Seventh Inning of My Life, with guys that played for me back in the day. That's what we all talk about. Not just winning championships, which we did a lot of, but how well they did with those life skills that helped them become just great men in our world today.
So with these key skills of responsibility and hard work and teamwork, the development of the skill in the sport, how do you weave spirituality into this mission?
Sure. Well, you know, I think spirituality and life skills, you know, I talk about honesty. I talk about friendship. I talk about commitment to people. You know, those are all spiritual principles. You know, I wish we had more of those in our everyday life. I don't think we'd be in the shape we're in, but that's a Pete thing. but I think, you know, spirituality to me is just a way of being more of a positive person in almost a negative world. So I've always taken these life skills as to be positive thoughts in ways that we can live our lives.
Okay, so I have a question. You've been a winning coach, and obviously coaching-wise, you've had many successes, but what do you say to the coach who does not have a winning team or the player who's on a team that always seems to be losing?
Well, I think, you know, and that's again the thing, you know, let me take this back to a classroom. Does the young man who makes a C learn less than the girl that makes an A? I don't know.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. And I think the same thing is sports. You know, if you're coaching a team and you're doing the best you can with the tools you have, bravo to you. And I think we've got to get out of the mindset that says if we win, then that's good and we learn life skills. Hmm. You know, if we don't win, maybe we learn more life skills. Maybe we learn more about hard work and concentration and commitment and attitude. I think sometimes we get caught up in the winning instead of the how-to part of what we're doing.
Yes, it reminds me of a quote, and I do not know where it's from, but the quote is, you know, a saint is not someone who does something perfectly. A saint is someone who gets up and tries again.
Oh, absolutely. And I think our biggest thing that I tell coaches all the time, let's create the environment that our young people can do the best in it. Now, we may not win all the time then, but if we create an environment that the young people we have can do the best that they can, I think that's a grand slam. I think that's a home run.
I do too. So who can attend this clinic?
Well, the virtual, anybody can, Emily, anybody. And if they want to specially register, they can go into the PeterJMulreyFoundation.org, sign up there.
And also we have it on our community calendar, which is on MySpiritFM.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, we hope we can get more information, but they can go right in there at 9 o'clock. It'll be live, Facebook, Peter J. Mulrey Foundation Live, and then also YouTube. But anybody can be a part of that. And just so if I could quickly list, we're going to have quite a panel. One is the former manager of the Colorado Rockies and the Pittsburgh Pirates, Clint Hurdle, special assistant and scout for the Miami Marlins, Joe Caro, current player, Michael Gibbons, who went to play in high school, pitches with the Rockies, Emily Glass, who is the director of life skills for the Miami Marlins, and Orestes Estrada, who played in the major leagues. And he's one of the biggest Rays backers. He's one of the Rays announcers and just a tremendous man. So the panel itself will be absolutely dynamite.
That's wonderful. Okay, so before we sign off, I was just thinking, from all your memories that you have coaching all these years, is there just one memory you could share with us?
Sure. My one memory, I think is it's a memory, but it's a present thing. What I really admire through all of the wins and whatever, Emily, is I probably coached 100 guys at Tampa Catholic High School. And I would say out of that, I probably still 40 and 50 years, I still have great relationships with 70 out of the 100.
Wow.
And that's my greatest memory, is they're still talking to me after all this time.
You know what? That's a beautiful memory. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And again, if someone's listening, they can find out more information about the event on peterjmulreyfoundation.org, or we'll have a link to also that site and the details on myspiritfm.com under the community calendar.
You're listening to How We See It, a look at issues and ministries that are having an impact in our community and world. If you missed any of today's program, you'll find a copy on Spirit FM's SoundCloud page. There's a link to it at myspiritfm.com. Now, back to our program.
Your Spirit FM 90.5, getting the amazing opportunity to speak with the author of a new book called Black Sheep. He's an author, he's a motivational speaker, a podcast host, and I am blessed to call him my friend as well. Brant Menswar is with us. Hi, Brant.
Hey, how are you?
I'm so excited about your book.
It's been a minute since I have been in the Spirit FM studios.
So Brant and I have a very long history of when I hosted the evening show here at Spirit back in 2001. We met and he was in a local band from Lakeland.
Yes.
And then was in two other bands that I know of.
We sold dozens of records and hit the ceiling. And yeah, you guys actually, Spirit FM, after we signed our first record deal, Fort Pastor, Spirit FM was the first station in the country to really start playing our stuff and gave us our only number one hit in Iowa, March Out. Yes. So we are forever indebted to Spirit FM and you.
So we've moved on from there.
Yes.
And now Brant is also the founder of Rockstar Impact. Let's talk a little bit about that first.
Sure. Many of you know that have sort of followed my story. The station here has been very generous with their prayers and things for my oldest son, Theo, who was battling cancer. That sort of forced me off the road with the band and had to find something else to do with my life. And so I sort of just moved over from one platform to another onto the public speaking and the keynote speaking, conference speaking area. And that is what I've been doing for the better part of 8 years now. And it's been incredible to be able to sort of, I started sort of in the collaboration space and teaching organizations how to collaborate, and then now have moved into the core values and purpose space with this new book. And it's just been an amazing ride. I joke around that I get treated way more like a rock star now than when I actually was a rock star. Let's just say the conferences that I'm speaking at are not at Motel 6
right,
these days.
Exactly.
So it's good.
So tell us about the new book.
So the new book is called Black Sheep, Unleash the Extraordinary, Awe-Inspiring, Undiscovered You.
That is a long topic, a long title.
It is, but it needed to be because people have a misconception about black sheep. I was 47 years old before somebody finally explained to me why farmers don't value black sheep like the rest of the flock. And when I heard the truth, it sort of just shocked me in such a way that it led to wanting to write this book specifically about the truth behind what black sheep are. So the reason that farmers do not value black sheep like the rest of the flock is a black sheep's wool cannot be dyed. So every black sheep in effect is 100% authentically original, and it can't be changed into something it wasn't meant to be. So when I heard that, I'm like, literally, that's my life's goal. I want to be that 100% authentic creation that I was meant to be. So the book talks about how do we find what I call your flock of five black sheep values. Those are those deeply held personal core values that no matter how much someone wants to try to influence you, they simply can't be changed.
When you started writing this book, what was the turning point for writing this book? What made you say, you know what, I need to write a book about finding my core values?
During the 263 days that we were in the hospital with Theo, I faced the crossroads in a moment, and I made what I consider to be the worst decision I've ever made in my life. And that is really where this book was birthed out of. We, you know, Theo needed a bone marrow transplant. He had this rare blood cancer. And so we have the transplant, everything goes fine. And then he develops something called graft versus host disease, which is where the marrow that's inserted in the body doesn't really recognize the environment that it's been placed into. So it begins to attack everything. And so you have to super suppress the immune system so it won't fight back. There are four different levels. Level 4 will kill you. And he had level 4 plus. And so they're desperately trying to suppress his immune system to stop it from attacking. And while they do so, he ends up contracting this deadly fungus that the only way to treat it is to super boost the immune system. So he has two different things that are threatening his life with opposite treatments, and it creates this zero-sum game. You know, get called into the parents' lounge after a couple hundred days. My wife and I walk into the room, and there's a line of doctors sitting in there. And they say, "We're so sorry, but there's nothing else we can do. We don't think he's going to make it through the night. No matter what we treat, the other's going to take his life. And so you should probably go back and say your goodbyes and call whoever you need to call." And so, you know, we were not prepared for that. But what do you do when you're faced with this type of information? And so, you know, I stood up. We walked back down the hall to his room. We grab his younger brother, who's 3 years younger than him. And, you know, we sit on the edge of the bed and we try to find the words to say goodbye. And this, for parents, this is that one thing that you never want to have to experience, to hear your child say, "I'm going to miss you, Daddy," right? It's this awful thing that you don't ever get over. And as I'm sitting there and I'm struggling, and I my emotions are swirling, and I say my goodbyes. I go ahead, call my younger brother, who lives 1,500 miles away in New Hampshire, and say, "You're not going to have time to make it. You're going to have to say your goodbyes over the phone. I'm sorry if this is the case." And so he does. He's incredibly distraught, and as you can imagine. And so he decides that night he's feeling helpless. So he sits on his couch and he holds up these poster boards and never says a word. He simply plays the song "Fix You" by Coldplay. And he just writes what's happening on the boards, right? "My nephew's dying. We're running out of time. This is what we have tried. This is what he has. If you have any ideas, please help us." It's a Hail Mary. And he uploads it to YouTube. I sit on the edge of the bed all night waiting for Theo to pass. He makes it through the night and my phone starts ringing off the hook, but I'm ignoring it. I'm trying to be present, right? I'm awful at being present. And I'm trying to just take in every last second I possibly can. But after a couple of hours, my phone is literally hot from vibrating. So I finally grab it and I look at it and I see all these names and numbers from people that I do not know. And what I didn't realize is that video that my brother uploaded to YouTube, by the time I grabbed my phone, it had already been seen 500,000 times. And I'm getting calls from doctors from all over the world who said, "I saw this video and I think I might be able to help." So one of them was at MD Anderson in Houston, who happens to be one of the leading doctors in this fungus that's killing him. And he says, "There's this new treatment. I don't know that your doctor's aware of. It's experimental, but it may allow him to treat both things at the same time. Would you mind if I speak to him?" So we put them together. And then I got a call from Dr. Tim Johnson from Good Morning America. And he said, "You know, tell your doctor to make a list of whoever he wants to speak with, and I'll try to make it happen in the next 24 hours. So he did. He held up his end of the bargain. We spoke to everyone we wanted to speak to, a doctor at Dana-Farber in Boston and a research doctor at Cornell University. And the four doctors put their heads together and came up with this crazy plan to try to save Theo's life. And it worked. So, you know, Theo just turned 23 years old before the pandemic here, went to a class with kids in it for the first time since the eighth grade.
Wow.
And I go back and I say, the worst decision, you know, I spent 5 years after this fairy tale ending, right? So we know not everybody gets the ending that we got. In fact, Theo's the only survivor of all the people who were receiving transplants at the time that we were there. But I went to bed every night for 5 years with one question in my head, which is, I wonder if he thinks I gave up on him. And so the truth was that it was a valid question. And I didn't have any of the things defined in my life that were my non-negotiables. And if I would have, the conversation I would have had with him on the edge of that bed would have been completely different. It would have been filled with the things that I know now matter most to me, like hope and creativity and impact and all of these things that are so important. So, you know, I decided a couple of years later to finally get my stuff together and define these things in my life so that I could help others figure out the same thing, so that if they ever find themselves in this position of this incredible crossroads of a storm blowing into their life, that they have something to hold on to. And so that was the sort of reason that I decided to write this book, was to help others discover these non-negotiables so they can make better decisions in those times.
So in a short way of kind of explaining an overview of the book, The Black Sheep, and you can go to the website, findyourblacksheep.com. How can someone start on that journey of finding their core values?
There's a couple of different ways. The long road is to take what Maslow would call peak experiences in your life, and you go back over the course of your life and you look for these peak experiences, both good and bad, that sort of have formed the very foundation of your beliefs. And you start to dissect those as to who is involved and how did it make you feel and what was the impact of that. Takes a tremendous amount of vulnerability and courage, which, to be honest, most of us don't possess. And so I created a assessment that will help you dip your toe into the values pool, right? So at findyourblacksheep.com, you can click on Find Your Flock. And what it does is it presents you with 125 commonly held personal core values. And it says, in a knee-jerk sort of reaction, just go ahead and read the words. And if there's any word that resonates with you, if you think it's really important to you in your life, go ahead and select it. And what we know after a couple of years of doing this assessment and gathering the data is that the average person selects at least 30 words out of that 125. And what my first question is usually after that happens is, tell me what crippling anxiety and depression feels like, because there's no way you can honor 30 things on a daily basis. So what we have to do is take that subset of words and we have to group them together by likeness. So things like sympathy and empathy and caring for others go in one bucket, and things like achievement and success and accountability go in another bucket. And before you're done, all of those words are separated into five different buckets, and you get to pick one word per bucket that is your non-negotiable, the one word that no matter what someone says, you will not be moved on. And that gets you to your initial flock of five black sheep values. Here's the interesting thing. We know from the data and the thousands of people now that have taken this course, it's a 5-week program to figure this stuff out. What we know is that two or three of that initial five values, we know they're rock solid real, right? That they are, they can give me 20 different examples over the course of their lives as to why they believe these. But we also know that two or three of them are 100% fabricated stuff.
Is that because we want to be those things, or yeah, is it because we are maybe afraid to reach those?
So what I'll say is it could be a couple of different reasons, right? So one is, yes, they are aspirational sheep. They're who we want to be. Or they are what somebody is telling us we should be, right? So some of us have grown up conditionally caring for other people's sheep, right? So if you grew up caring for siblings or an elderly parent or grandparent, you know what it's like to care for other people's sheep. And so it's just part of your DNA, but that doesn't mean that those are your non-negotiable core values. And so the idea here of this is you have to prove which ones are yours and which ones are not. Because until you can get to the five that are really yours, it makes it incredibly difficult for you to stay committed to anything, because it's these values that keep you committed to the goals that you have in your life.
So when people run into like conflict in their life, mm-hmm, and they are maybe put to the test at work, mm-hmm, they can take these values and then kind of rely on them and reflect back on them.
Sure. Well, think of that scenario. So let's say you are facing this thing that's happening to you at work. What do we normally do? Well, we have to deal with the 30, 40, or 50 things that we said were really important to us. And so it's like whack-a-mole, right? I mean, you're literally trying to figure out what you're going
yes
to do. It's not efficient. It's exhausting. And it's simply never going to get you to where you need to be. You're going to be winging it. You're guessing, right? So we can't have that. We have to go to these five non-negotiables. And so the idea is, when those things happen, you have a couple of questions you can simply ask yourself, which is this a direct violation of one of my black sheep values? If the answer is yes, you're going to know exactly what value it is violating and how to proceed. Or you're going to go, no, it's not. So let it go. It could be one of those 30 other things that are, mm-hmm, important, but it's not a non-negotiable, so let it go. There are more important things to focus on. And that's why it's so important to figure those things out, because without it, people just are constantly, it's like pin the tail on the donkey, right? I'm like, you're just spinning and spinning and spinning and hoping that you hit your target.
You can take the quiz on his website. It's called findyourblacksheep.com, and you can also pick up a copy of the book there as well, and it's in stores.
Barnes & Noble. Yep.
All right, so check it out, findyourblacksheep.com. Speaking with Brant Menswear today.
Thanks for listening to today's program. This presentation and others like it are made possible by supporters like you. If you'd like a copy of today's program, make comments or suggestions, and to help us keep this important programming on the air, visit myspiritfm.com/howweseeit.